by an old friend of mine, Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe. Been a hectic couple of days for Pete. And Pete, I was talking to you before we started. Weird offseason for you guys. You're usually talking about who are the Red Sox going to sign. You've spent this entire offseason talking about, are you going to trade Mookie Betts, the luxury tax, and now the whole thing with Alex Cora. Boy, what a weird offseason for you guys.
Yeah, it sure is. And, you know, especially when you consider, you know, the Red Sox are won the World Series in 2018, and you know, they had some issues last year because of injuries with their starting pitching, but they still had a very good team. One of the best offensive teams in the game, and you certainly felt like they were going to have a chance to, you know, return to the playoffs and contend for a championship. But Dave Dombrowski gets fired in September, and then they bring in Chaim Bloom and start talking about cutting the payroll, and then this controversy with Alex Cora, that leads to his firing, a shocking fashion. And now this very good team and a lot of good players, it feels like it's starting over.
You know, I want to talk about the press conference yesterday. I watched it on the Major League Baseball Network. And did it seem strange to you? It seemed almost like a Alex Cora appreciation society rather than talking about what was going on. They just seemed to want to concentrate more. And look, I get that Alex Cora is a great guy and they really, you know, liked what he did. But it seemed like they didn't want to talk an awful lot about what had gone on there.
Well, they, to some degree, they were prohibited by Major League Baseball. The league sent out a memo after the Astros penalties came down telling teams not to talk about it.
Okay.
And the Red Sox are obviously waiting for their own the investigation into their 2018 season to conclude. So I think that was a lot of that was on purpose, that they were, you know, they were told they couldn't comment on specific parts of that investigation. But yeah, I thought it was very odd that, you know, here's a guy who's essentially was fired because of, breaking the rules. And yeah, there was certainly a lot more, nice things said about him than bad things. And it was strange. Like, they were there to talk about a manager leaving, and it was like, boy, what a great guy he is, and we're going to miss him. And
right.
He had all of these excellent qualities, and the next manager we hire should be a lot like him. And it was very strange.
You know, the other thing I took away from this, and I'm, you know, maybe, I don't know if this is a sign that maybe there's something we don't know, but when John Henry asked the fans and said, you know, asking them to kind of withhold judgment and to be patient, almost like you kind of get the sense that maybe the thing with the Red Sox isn't as bad as everybody seems to think it is.
Yeah, that was kind of the focus of my story today, that it seems pretty obvious that the Red Sox do not believe that whatever the league is going to find about the 2018 season is going to be very damaging. And now what they're basing that on, I would have to assume they've either spoken to the investigators or they've spoken to their own players and Cora. And they clearly do not believe it's going to rise to the level of what happened with the Astros. They seem very, very confident about that. And I can't imagine they would have said all the things they said without having some kind of knowledge about it. But at the same time, they acknowledge that what Alex did with the Astros left them little choice but to move on from him as manager. So, based on what they said yesterday, you know, the Red Sox are not going to lose draft picks or get a $5 million fine or any of that sort of stuff. But I guess we have to wait and see what comes out of that.
Well, if that is the case, that probably bodes well for Alex Cora's possibility of getting back into the game, because there's a lot of people that were saying, you know, he did it in Houston, he did it again in Boston, you know, he could well find himself out of baseball forever. Nobody might ever want to touch him again. If it turns out that it's not as bad in Boston, maybe that helps him down the road.
Yeah, I suppose so. And one of my friends, Andrew Marchand, who writes for the New York Post, brought up a good point yesterday that A-Rod managed to rehabilitate his reputation in about 2 years. And he went from being released by the Yankees and this terrible pariah, and he had taken performance enhancing drugs, and he sued the Yankees. He spoke poorly about the commissioner and the Major League Baseball Players Association, and now he's doing games on ESPN.
Right.
So, everybody, when things happen that are bad, everybody goes, "Oh, this is it. This guy's never going to recover." It's very rare when nobody ever recovers. And I think whether it's Alex or A.J. Hinch, you know, there's probably going to come a time you're going to see them back in baseball. I don't know if that's going to be the case for Jeff Luhnow, who's got a very bad reputation around the game.
Right.
But especially for A.J. Hinch. A.J. Hinch feels like, you know, a guy who was in a bad situation. He didn't want to, you know, kind of mess things up for his own players, but at the same time, he didn't approve what was going on. I think in time, and both of those guys are fairly young men, I think eventually you're going to see those guys back in baseball.
What about the thought that it's so funny when the whole thing happened in Houston? Now, you know, I take what I read on Twitter with a grain of salt because I consider Twitter kind of like the cesspool of the internet. But how about the thought that a lot of people were saying that the punishment in Houston was not enough, that any team in baseball would trade a GM, a coach, and four draft picks for a World Series title, that the punishment should have been harsher so that no team will consider doing this again? I don't know that I agree with that.
Well, you could say that, but at the same time, that's the harshest punishment that's been handed down to any team.
Right.
And to some degree, you know, the $5 million fine is the most that they could levy. That, you know, that was within the Major League Baseball Constitution. So Manfred was handcuffed in that sense. You know, the taking away 2 years of draft picks, that, you know, that's never happened to a team. And I don't think that Major League Baseball wanted to get into the, you know, vacating titles like the NCAA does. And, you know, we're going to have a blank space and a list of teams who won the World Series. I don't think that's something MLB wants to get into.
Right.
And I also understand why they didn't punish any players individually, because it's not like every single offensive player was wanted to steal signs. And you don't know how many, you know, did that help every single player every single time he was at the plate? Now, obviously, you know, not. Did, you know, were there some players who got 3 hits out of it and other players who got 20 hits out of it? I mean, that's probably true.
Yep.
But you're never going to know the exact results of that. That's impossible to determine. So it's not like you could make a list and say, okay, well, Alex Bregman's going to get 10 games and Carlos Correa is going to get 4 games.
Right.
And, you know, you're never going to be able to figure that out.
Yeah.
So I understand why they didn't punish any players. I don't know. To me, when I saw those penalties, I thought they were pretty severe. And the public embarrassment that the Astros felt, the fact that the manager got fired, I think just the fact that the manager got fired and the general manager got fired, that's a pretty strong deterrent if you're one of the other 29 managers now in baseball.
How do the players in Houston navigate this now? I mean, you just talked about the fact that, look, they're all kind of lumped into this. It was going on, and now this is something that they're going to have hanging over them for the rest of their career. But more importantly, spring training's coming up, and I mean, is this something that if you're as an organization, you say, look, we're going to address this on the first day, and then I don't want to talk about it anymore? But how do they negotiate that all year?
Well, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of, you know, I'm not going to discuss that, and that's in the past, and we have to move forward, and all that sort of thing. And it'll be a week or so where it'll take for it to die down in spring training. There'll be a lot of national media at the Astros camp. It's kind of funny that the Astros and Nationals share a spring training site. So if you're it's sort of a one-stop shopping if you're somebody in the national media,
right?
But I think the problem for them is going to come during the season, because everywhere they go, they're going to get booed by opposing fans. The players are going to get heckled about, you know, hey, you know, did you strike out because you didn't get the sign, and did you hit that home run because you got the sign, and this. And the other thing about that too, and I remember just from covering baseball over the years, there are some hitters who don't want to know what's coming,
right?
Because they feel like that's going to mess up their timing at the plate, and they trust their own abilities to hit the pitch wherever it comes. And there are other hitters who really want to know what's coming, and they'll study the opposing pitcher, and they'll try to figure out patterns. And sometimes you'll see them strike out on fastballs right down the middle because they were convinced that it was going to be a breaking ball on the outside corner.
Right.
And so you can't. You know, there's my understanding, like, for instance, is that Jose Altuve never wanted to know what was coming.
Okay.
But he's probably going to get heckled as much as anybody else.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, it's not going to be a pleasant season for sure for the Houston Astros.
Well, now let's talk about the one that's really a guy that's in the gray area. Carlos Beltran. What are the Mets going to do? He was a player, so he's not going to be punished. But he was named in the investigation, in the report, as being one of the masterminds of the thing. and yet now he's leading the New York Mets. Are the Mets going to want to bail on this guy?
Well, you know, to me, it's not much of a gray area. I think it was intentional that the commissioner's report listed him, you know, named him. Okay. I think that they were, it was funny because Manfred, at one, you know, at one part of that report, Manfred says, well, I can't determine the correct punishment for the players because of all of the variables. But at the same time, he mentions that Carlos Beltran was the instigator of this situation.
Right.
That he
yeah.
wanted to, you know, find a better way to steal signs. So he turned to his friend Alex Cora, and they came up with this system. So I think without levying punishment, Manfred levied punishment by mentioning Carlos Beltran. And then at the same time, what's happened is when the initial story came out that the Astros are stealing signs, the New York media, you know, started calling around and talking to people. And one of the and they called Carlos Beltran, who flat out denied it and
right.
said, I don't, you know, all we did was watch, you know, game video and you know, I don't know anything about a camera in center field and I don't know anything about a monitor. I'm shocked to hear about all of this. Well, he was, you know, flat out lying about
right.
that. I mean,
right.
obviously, he knew what was going on. So now the narrative in New York has become, how can the Mets have this guy manage? We know he's a liar. We know he had something to do with instigating the scheme. How could you ever trust him? You know, and the Mets are, I think, are going to be under a lot of pressure to fire him. And if they stand by him, that's going to make it perhaps even worse because, you know, then it's going to be, well, the Mets manager is a guy who lies. And every time there's some kind of controversy around the Mets, and there's always
right.
some kind of controversy around the Mets, they're going to question whether he's telling them the truth. So it's, the Mets are in a very, very bad position. And, you know, as somebody who started his career covering baseball, covering the Mets, it would be the most Mets thing ever to hire a manager and then have to fire him before he even managed one game.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point. So you had an idea right after this whole thing with Houston came down. You wrote in the Boston Globe and that probably the only way to solve this is to pull the plug. When the game starts, no live video anywhere. And, you know, and that affects replay because now you don't have the, you know, the ability to for the coaches to check to see if it's, they should replay or not. They're going to have to do it by gut instinct, which, by the way, is the way I thought it should have been done in the first place rather than using video to do it. But that was the idea that you have. Mike DeMauro, our friend, wrote in the New London Day this morning something similar that he's lost the faith that baseball's on the up and up, and the only way to get that back might be to pull the plug. How likely do you think that is?
Well, Rob Manfred has said in several interviews that that's on the table, that that's something that they're considering doing. And I've also seen, you know, this talk about, well, they could have, the catchers could have some kind of device and they could signal the pitcher and there would be like blinking lights in the mound and they could have a headset and they could have this and that. And I mean, I to me, you're talking about all of these complicated things. To me, you know, they played baseball for a long, long time without live video during a game.
Yes.
And, you know, Ted Williams managed to hit .406 without looking at every at-bat during a game. So
right.
I think you could still have replay. It could just be run by an umpire who's up in the press box.
Okay.
And the other part about this, I think, that's been lost is they put in this replay system, you know, based on that blown call for the perfect game, you know, for Armando Galarraga.
Yep.
And it was very well intentioned that there should be a system to correct the most egregiously mistaken calls, that this would be a good thing for the game. And I think it is a good thing for the game. You should be able to fix terribly, you know, terrible calls. But what it morphed into was, okay, well, every manager's got challenges. And then at the end of the game, when they still have challenges, they try to check calls that they know aren't wrong, but they hope that maybe there'll be some little sliver of light between the glove and the back, and they'll be able to get the call changed. That's not the spirit of the rule. The
right.
spirit of the rule is to fix the most terribly blown calls. And it's become like gamesmanship and how you use replay, you know, like the second baseman holds his glove on the runner for like 5 seconds after he slides in a second.
I hate
just
that.
In case he lifts his leg a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
I hate that.
Yeah, all of this, you know, this kind of stuff, and it slows the game down. How many times during the game do you see a close call, the manager holds up his hand, and you got to wait, and then, oh, okay, keep going, you know. And even, like, the calls that are overturned on bang-bang plays, I think, like, those even out over the course of time. Like, and those aren't, you know, calls that blow the World Series or whatever, stuff like that. So I think if you consolidated replay and put it in the hands of an umpire up in the press box level, and then just when the game starts, the video's off, and the game doesn't go back on until the game is all over. And if the players want to review their performance, they could do it either before the game or after the game. They can't do it in the middle of innings. And I think that would take away all of the, you know, wondering if something's going on. It would take away all the accusations. It would take away, you wouldn't ever wonder, has some team figured out a way to get around the rules? Because it would be simple. There's no way to do it.
Well, it's just, you know, the problem is it's always hard to put the genie back in the bottle, you know, and that's my biggest concern with it.
But I think that is. I mean, if there's no live video that a baseball player can look at during the game, what's he gonna do? And like, say they put in some system where there's blinking lights on the mound, and the pitcher can look down at the blinking lights and gets the signal from the catcher. It's going to be 2 weeks before they say, well, the Toronto Blue Jays had a guy with binoculars in center field, and he was looking at the blinking lights. And, you know,
You're right.
It's no matter what they do, you know, somebody said, well, you could have a smart watch on the catcher and a smart watch on the pitcher, and they could communicate that way. The Detroit Tigers hacked into the smartwatch, and they figured out, you know, it'll take 2 weeks before they accuse somebody of doing something. And
you're right.
I just think if you shut it off, you shut it off, and that's the end of it. And if the players will complain about it, and, I need to look at my at-bat. Well, you know, Pete Rose got all his hits without looking at live video, and the game will move on just fine if you can't look at every at-bat.
You know, I wasn't going to bring that up, but you just mentioned his name. You know, Pete Rose's name has come up a lot with this whole cheating scandal, and people are going to say, well, you know, Pete Rose, you know, didn't do anything to affect the integrity of the game. Yes, he gambled, but he was trying to win, and Pete Rose was banned for life. These guys were cheating, affecting the integrity of the game. Why aren't they banned for life? What do you say to that one?
This is a topic that drives me crazy, because every time there's some sort of controversy in baseball, all these Pete Rose defenders rise up and talk about how poor Pete Rose got screwed. Well, what Pete Rose did absolutely it affected the integrity of the game. And you could say, well, you know, he didn't bet against the Reds. Okay, well, that's fine. But when somebody is gambling on the game, you're inviting something to happen. Because if he gets down in a hole and the gamblers go to him and say, hey, you want to get out of the hole? You just have to lose this game to the Padres on Tuesday night, and especially a manager.
Yeah,
it would affect so many different things that a manager could subtly do to lose a game.
True.
And then the other part of it is, okay, so Pete Rose was betting only for the Reds to win. Okay, so let's say the Reds have lost three games in a row, and he really needs to win the next game. Did he use his relief pitchers in such a way that was a must-win game for him because he needed to get back on the winning side?
Good point.
Did he change his lineup to make sure, you know, certain players were playing because he needed to win that game? There's so many things that could have affected the game. And you cannot let fans go to games thinking that gambling could somehow be affecting the game. Because once that happens, you know, it's college basketball back in the 50s, and the sport is in danger of really falling, you know, falling into a place where they never want to go. And I kind of wonder that, you know, there's going to start to become legal sports betting all around the country. You're going to be able to bet on games, you know, baseball games on your phone. Every team is now entering partnerships with casinos and DraftKings and all of this other stuff. I think part of what Rob Manfred did with this sign-stealing business is to try to end sign-stealing, so that as Major League Baseball gets more heavily involved in gambling, you're not going to wonder if sign stealing is affecting the game.
Good point. Last thing from me, so I can let you go. Where do the Red Sox go from here? I know you put that Ron Renicke might be a good choice, but if Ron Renicke was involved, or he obviously, if the Red Sox were doing something wrong, he was Alex Cora's right-hand man, he had to know about it. Can they really go to a guy that might be tainted as their next guy, or do they need to move on to somebody else?
Yeah, I think you know, they were talking very glowingly about Ron Reinicke after the press conference yesterday. So, I kind of get a sense that they feel like whenever this report comes out on their activities, it's not going to include, you know, Ron Reinicke's name. It's not going to include Jason Veritek's name. They seem, you know, you wouldn't say all the nice things that they said about him yesterday without having some sense about that.
Okay.
I think, when they're looking at the manager, I think there's the one big thing is, do they want an interim manager for this season and then conduct a full search after the season, or do they want to find their next manager now? And it's going to be difficult because there's not much time to do it. You don't have a lot of time to, you know, bring in seven candidates and you know, have a bunch of interviews and vet them and, you know, all this other stuff. You're going to have to move quickly because spring training starts on February 12th. So I once they determine whether it's an interim manager or a regular manager, that'll give it a little bit of clarity. The thing that's interesting to me, Gene, is right now Dusty Baker and Clint Hurdle, Buck Showalter, Mike Socha, and Bruce Bochy are all unemployed.
Right.
And are all, I think, guys who have a lot of integrity, guys who have been very successful managers, older guys who have seen a lot and won't be rattled by any questions about, you know, the sign-stealing business and Mookie Betts. And, you know, this is all stuff that they've had to deal with before. And I think are guys who would immediately command the respect of the players. And, you know, Alex Cora was an extremely popular manager within the Red Sox clubhouse, and a lot of players thought, you know, really highly of him. Now, if you were to make it, you know, Ron Reinicke, or you were to make, you know, hire a guy who's never been a manager before, but who you think has got a chance to be a good manager, you know, that could potentially work out. But if it's Dusty Baker sitting in that chair on February 12th, you know, whether it's Mookie Betts or J.D. Martinez or David Price or Chris Sale, you're going to have a lot of respect for Dusty Baker.
Right.
And you know, you're gonna do what Dusty Baker tells you to do. You know, if it's Clint Hurdle, if it's Mike Socha, any of those guys,
right.
You know, you're gonna you know, do what you have to do, and not, that's not a manager you're gonna want to cross. So I kind of wonder if they could take advantage of those guys being available, and go to one of them and say, hey, we need somebody to come in and handle this crisis for us. What would you think about coming in for 1 year, trying to do this job, and then at the end of the year, we'll see where it goes. You know, whether we want, you know, whether you want to stay around, whether you don't want to stay around, whether we want to keep you. And I do kind of think one of those guys would be interested in a job like that. And I think that would be, if you were to hire somebody who's known for their integrity and has a reputation for great success, wouldn't be afraid of the media, that would be something that the Red Sox, I think, would be the most efficient way and quickest way to move on. And kind of get this in their rearview mirror by the public face of the team being somebody who very few people could say, well, geez, I'm not sure I believe what that guy's saying.
Do you think that the Mookie Betts situation and their desire, at least a lot of people hope it's their desire to sign him long term, do you think that that thinking process will be involved in the next manager?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know that there's, you know, I mean, if you want to sign Mookie Betts' dad to be your manager, I suppose that would help you keep Mookie Betts. But I don't think there's any manager that's going to change Mookie Betts' thoughts about this.
Yep.
And his thoughts are pretty simple. He wants to get what he feels like his value is.
Right.
And he's not going to let that be swayed by, you know, how much he likes Boston or, you know, how much he likes his teammates, how much he likes his manager. When you think about Mookie Betts' career in Boston, They've changed GMs. They've changed managers several times. His teammates have practically completely turned over since he first broke into the league. Guys come and go. And, you know, everybody will sit around and talk about, oh, the boy, the 2018 team had great chemistry. And they sure did. But, you know, Mitch Moreland's gone. Brock Holt's going to be gone. You know, things change in a very, you know, rapid period of time in the big leagues.
Yeah.
So Mookie Betts is not going to make a decision for the next 8 years of his career, I think, based on anything other than what's right for Mookie Betts. So, and that's going to be where he wants to live and how much money he's going to make. So that could well be the Red Sox if they step up and make him an offer that, you know, which is what he wants. But I don't think it's going to be affected by the manager. I don't think it's going to be affected by his teammates. I don't think it's going to be affected by, you know, is this a competitive team right now? Because teams can become competitive in 18 months. So, and competitive teams can become lousy in 18 months.
Right.
So, I think he's going to look at this very pragmatically, very black and white. There's not going to be any, you know, he's not going to be swayed by the emotion of the moment. He's going to get what he feels like he should get, and whether that's in Boston or, you know, anywhere else, he's going to make a decision that, that he feels is the right decision for the long term. And I don't think who the manager is in 2020 or, you know, did this guy get suspended or whatever, I don't think that's going to have anything to do with it.
Well, Pete, it's been a hectic few days for you, and unfortunately for you, they're not over, but with about a month to go before spring training, I wish you the best of luck, and I look forward to talking to you during the year.
Well, I appreciate that, Gene. Thank you.
All right, Pete Abraham here from the Boston Globe on Sports Country Radio.